To quote Thomas Jefferson, a well-informed citizenry is the best defense against tyranny. Welcome to the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God, where we discuss the basics of our constitutional republic and how our freedoms are being seized by public officials, both elected and unelected. I'm Mark DeLuzio, a former candidate for the U.S. Congress and a Gold Star father. Join me as we learn together how we can save this unique experiment that we call America. Hi, Mark DeLuzio, episode 53. This episode is titled The Mind of the Voter, Stories from the Campaign Trail. Many of you may know I ran for U.S. Congress back in Arizona in 2022. And by the way, almost won, if not for a late endorsement by President Trump. It was a very Trump-based district. We were going to come in first. The person who ended up winning got endorsed by Trump through all kinds of internal politics in Arizona. By the way, Arizona politics was very corrupt at the time. Don't know about it today, but and I'm talking about the Republican Party, by the way, never mind the Democrats, okay? It was a cesspool. When Trump called it the swamp, it's more than that, right? When I was a kid, I played in the swamp, and when I came home, I took a bath and I was clean. I don't think these people would ever be clean, some of them anyway. But anyway, I ran for Congress and it was an education for me. First of all, I got in late. We did 135 meet and greets in 5 months. That's like six a week if you do the math. And I had the biggest geographic district in the country. It was 63,000 square miles, the second district up in Arizona. I had the Navajo Nation. I went from the border of Utah all the way down to Florence and Maricopa, not Maricopa County, but Maricopa, the town of Maricopa. I did have some Maricopa County in my district. Anyway, it was a huge district. And at 63,000 square miles, just to give you an idea, the state of Pennsylvania is about 45,000 square miles. So that's how big the district was. So we did all kinds of driving and went to all these different towns and all these different events. And we almost won it. I do think, though, God was looking out for me and said, nope, that's not for you. It's not going to work. We got other plans for you. And I think now that I look back, it's probably a blessing I didn't win. But it was a heck of an education. And I was also mentored by some unbelievable political people who some of the best, I believe, in the country. And they weren't political consultants, believe it or not. And that's a whole other crowd of incompetence that I won't talk about yet today. But I got to see a lot about politics, how it works. I walked away with the notion that politics does not attract the best and the brightest. Okay, now, I came out of a very successful corporation. I was part of the team that made it successful, a company called Danaher. And many people said, hey, how would that individual or that politician make it in Danaher? He wouldn't make it in Danaher because he would never get hired. A lot of incompetence in politics. And there's no resume. There's no job requirements, right, to be a politician. And I know that's how the founders found it and, you know, set it up that way. But I learned an awful lot on the campaign trail, and I want to share some of the things that I did. Now, I'm not trying to poke fun at anybody, but I want to show you the questions I was asked running for U.S. Congress at the federal level, the questions I was asked, and some of the anecdotes that happened with me on the campaign trail that, as I walked away from this, I said, wow. Our public is unbelievably misinformed about what this country is all about. And I think when I go through some of these questions, you're going to see what I'm talking about. The other thing I walked away with was that most politicians don't give a rat's ass about the American people. They care more about their power. They care more about their money, and of course their votes, and they'll pay an awful lot of attention and say all the right things around election time. But I saw people hurting, almost reaching out to me. Mark, you got to help me. Now, remember, this is during the Biden fiasco. And I did some math. And when his gas prices rose to over $5 a gallon, see, the district was so big, some people were traveling one way to work, 50 miles. So that's, you know, 100 miles a day, 5 days a week, that's 500 miles. And if you did the math and an extra $2.50 a gallon on gas, it came out to over $3,000 a year just to get to work. Never mind the fact that his inflation just depleted any of the savings that they had, right? It's the worst tax at all of all is inflation. It's devaluing the dollars that you already pay taxes on, okay? So I felt so bad for these people. And they were like, we can't make ends meet. I'm going to lose my house. I met all this on the campaign trail. And I just could not believe how abused Americans are by our government. It was absolutely saddening to see, which made my resolve even stronger. I wanted to help them in any way I could, right? So let me go through some of the things that went on in the campaign trail, some of the questions I got asked. And, you know, some of this is a little bit lighthearted and kind of fun, but it gives you the idea, though, of what's going on out there. Okay. You know, many times I went into these meet and greets, there's 135 meet and greets, and, you know, they range anywhere from 20 to 100 people, usually around 40, okay? And I'm pretty good on policy. I've studied. I know my positions. I know the facts. I know the issues. And if I didn't know, I would tell somebody I didn't know. That rarely happened, though. And I love the meet and greet stuff. My wife would say, boy, you don't know what they're going to ask you, but you really like the Q&A part of this, don't you? I go, yeah, I love it. I love the challenge. But here's some of the questions I wasn't expecting, all right? And I'm going to kind of go through some of these right now. One guy said to me, Mark, what are you going to do to bring back morality into government? I said, what am I going to do to bring back morality into government? Well, geez, let me think about that. Maybe I'll buy a Bible for everybody in Congress. How does that work? And the crowd, about 50 people at that particular gathering, they started laughing. I said, if I did buy them a Bible, do you think they'd read it? You know? I said, come on. What kind of question is that? How would you bring back morality in government? Good luck with that, right? Hard to get people to show up to meetings on time, never mind bring back morality. I got an idea, I said. Why don't you take care of what you got to take care of? Because I'm sure you got things that you can improve on. I know I do. I'm sure the people here do. Instead of us trying to change the world, why don't we start working on ourselves first and then help the next guy next to us and make this world a little bit better place one person at a time? To expect a politician to instill morality in government, I'd rather solve something a lot easier, like world hunger, okay, or global peace. You got to be kidding me, right? But that's the kind of questions I was getting. One lady said to me, I want to know what you're going to do about my HOA. I said, your HOA? What do you mean? Yeah, I want to plant bushes against the fence. And they said I have to be 6 feet from the fence and I can't plant them near there and I can't do this and I can't do that. Wow. So I looked at her and I said, you do not want Nancy Pelosi getting involved in your HOA. If you think your HOA is screwed up now, wait till the federal government gets involved in it. You do not want that. I said, ma'am, look, as a federal legislator, they have no jurisdiction over your HOAs. That is between you and your HOA. Believe me, if you're having problems now, bringing even the city or the state into this, and I know states have governing rules over HOAs, right? You rue the day that you've asked for help, okay? But no, as a congressman, I'm not going to be able to help you. I hate to tell you. I'm not going to be able to help you with your HOA, all right? So another lady says to me at another time, these all happened at different times, okay? Not all at the same meeting. Again, I did 135 of these. What are you going to do about my tyrannical boss? And she was serious. He's a tyrant. He berates me every day. He's mean to me, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, and I'm dumbfounded. I'm standing here dumbfounded. Like, these poor people don't know. They don't know. What am I going to do about your tyrannical boss? I said, be honest with you, I can't help you. That's not my job. It's not what I'm supposed to be doing as a congressman. And again, you don't want the federal government getting involved in you and your boss. I mean, what happens if the federal government finds out you're the problem? Okay. I said, look, that's not what the federal government's all about. It's not what Congress is all about. But that was a question I got asked. One lady said, what are you going to do about the contrails that are dropping chemicals on my house, deadly chemicals? Do you know what a contrail was? I go, yeah. I said, it's the vapor that is behind like a jet at high altitudes. No, that's a contrail. I'm talking about contrails. Contrails drop chemicals, and they're dropping chemicals on my house. I said, okay, well, how are they dropping chemicals on your house? With drones. These drones fly over my house and they drop chemicals on me. They're all deadly. Here's the list. She had a list. Here's the list of all the chemicals that they drop. I said, well, how'd you get the list? I said, let me ask you, did you ever take a video of these contrails or a picture at least of these drones? No, never did. Why not? Why don't you take a picture of them? I said, do me a favor. The next time they come over your house, take a video, right? You got a video on your camera, right? On your phone. Yes. Take a picture and send it to me, okay? I'd like to see it. And maybe I can help you out. But this is what we got here, people, okay? At another time, a lady came up to me, and older woman, and she said to me, what are you going to do about the Social Security lockbox? I said, well, ma'am, look, the lockbox is kind of like a figure of speech. Like, our money was supposed to go into one account. Government wasn't supposed to touch it. It was going to be there for our future, and blah, 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 blah. But the government did go and take that money, and they put what they called IOUs into that account, and they spent it. No, you don't understand. There's an actual lockbox in Washington right now with my money in it, and I need to get that money out. So what are you going to do about that? Ma'am, look, there's no lockbox per se. There's not a physical lockbox. Oh, yes, there is, sir. Yes, there is. You don't know about that? You don't know about that lockbox? You have to get that lockbox and get my money. I said, ma'am, look, when I get to Washington, I will look into the lockbox issue, okay? I don't know what to tell you. I mean, this is the questions. These are the questions I got asked, okay? And I don't know where they're getting all this information from, all right? I don't even think CNN is that bad, okay? But they're so misinformed, right? In Arizona, water is a big deal, as you might expect. And so the question I would get numerous times, what are you going to do about the water problem in Arizona? Now, I'm a trained problem solver from Japan. I got trained in Japan how to problem solve. And the first rule of problem solving is you have to define the problem. So I have to know what problem I'm trying to solve. And so I said to these people who asked me about the water problem, can you Give me a little bit more information on what you mean by a water problem in Arizona. Well, you know, the water problem, that we've got a water issue here. Yeah, I understand that. I heard all about it, but, you know, there's all kinds of different ways to think about this water problem. What do you think is the issue? Well, it's all about the water. Well, you know, water, we got a water problem. Okay. Look, I was in a debate, as a matter of fact, and they asked this question. And all my opponents, there were seven of us up there, they all said, we're going to do desalinization. We're going to, one guy said, we should pump water into the, from the Mississippi. We should do this. We should do that. And they got to me, and I went last in this particular question. And I said, well, look, I want to know where the water is going. Lake Mead and Lake Powell, Lake Mead was down, I'm sorry, Lake Powell, and that's the lake that feeds our water supply up north, was down 170 feet. And the climate activists claimed it's global warming. Do you know how much evaporation? I mean, we've had droughts, and they say it's because of droughts, and it's because of climate change. Do you know how much evaporation you would have to have 170 feet of water evaporate from Lake Powell? I want to find out where the hell the water's going first. And everybody started clapping. I don't believe that that water just evaporated. I don't believe it. It's been hot in Arizona like this since Custer was a private, okay? So I'm not buying it. I have a suspicion that the water's being pumped out by the climate activists into the Sierra Cortez out in California. And sure enough, I was right, okay? So before we launch into solving a problem, we have to first define the problem and verify with facts that the problem really exists. So when you tell me there's a water problem, first of all, this is a state's issue, not a federal issue. Constitutionally, we should not be controlling your water at the federal level. And everybody clapped. I said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do about your water problem. I'm going to do my best to keep the EPA the hell out of Arizona because they don't belong here. Okay? That's what I'm going to do. As far as your water problem goes, there are a lot of issues with water, and I will agree with the climate activists that it is man-made, but not man-made in terms of us polluting with what they call CO2, which is a poison. It's not a poison. Trees need it to produce oxygen. Remember, ever hear of photosynthesis? So I said, it is man-made. It's manufactured in terms of what we do with the water, how we distribute it. And I think the California fires out in California this past year was evidence of the playing around that these guys are doing with their water supply. And the fire hydrants had no water to tap into this reservoir. It's the same thing. To accentuate the climate crisis, and I'm using air quotes when I say crisis, they're getting rid of the water and trying to scare the hell out of Americans that there's a water crisis. And then you get, you know, Eric Holder with the Fast and Furious giving guns to the cartel, killing our border agents to accentuate the anti-Second Amendment movement. You see how all this works? So I wasn't buying any of this crap, right? But again, they're programmed. Hey, what are you going to do about the water problem? This was an interesting one. This lady wrote to me and said, I'm going to be meeting you at whatever, I forget where it was, but a VFW. I was doing an event at a VFW. So sure enough, she showed up with the whole family. She said, I was going to run against you because you're not talking about a really key issue. I go, what is that? I said, geez, you know, I'm talking about the border. I'm talking about the economy. I'm talking about, you know, global war. I'm talking about, we need more off-ramps on I-17, on Interstate 17. Now, Interstate 17 runs right through Arizona, north to south. We need more off-ramps. I'm a truck driver. I drive an 18-wheeler. Now I'm looking at this lady. She's about 450 pounds. And I'm thinking to myself, how the hell do you get up in a truck? But that aside, I was going to run against you. And I think next time I might. I said, ma'am, look, that's a key issue. I missed that one. I said, geez, you know, I got to kind of go back and rethink my platform, you know. But this is how people think, okay. She wanted more off ramps on I-17 so that she can have rests along the way. There are some parts of I-17 that go on forever, okay. And then if you get stuck on I-17, there's no off ramp to escape. You're stuck in the desert. But anyway, that was that. One lady asked me, what are you going to do to meet in the middle and get along with the other side? So I said, meet in the middle. Well, since most of the policies on the left I am vehemently opposed to, I can't see me meeting anywhere in the middle, to be honest with you. You know, I'm not going to negotiate with them how many babies we're going to abort every year. I'm not going to negotiate with them how many guns they're going to ban and what they're going to take away. I'm not going to negotiate with them how much they want to raise my taxes and your taxes. I'd be happy to have the conversation and meet in the middle if we're going to argue about reducing taxes. But how come we're always arguing on their side of the ledger? I'm not playing that game. Sorry. There are certain things that are non-negotiables. And the crowd started clapping when I said this. There are certain things I can't meet. And I said, look, there might be some things I could meet in the middle. Right now, I can't think of any. Maybe you can help me. But not those things. Okay? Spending. Government spending. If we're not reducing spending like we should, I'm not willing to meet anywhere. So, again, this is the questions that, you know, that I got. One lady said to me, what are you going to do about reforming our border policy? So I asked her what she meant by reform, and she couldn't tell me, okay? Remember, the Socratic method is that I learned in Japan is when you ask a question, you might have to ask three more questions to hopefully have them answer it themselves. But she didn't know. I said, look, reforming the border policy is code for legislating legally anybody who wants to come to our country can walk across the border without going through Title 8 of the U.S. Code. That's our immigration policy, okay? So Title 8 of the U.S. Code is not being followed right now, and President Biden should be impeached. And I can't understand how this Republican Congress is not offering articles of impeachment to President Biden for not upholding his take care clause in the Constitution. The take care clause says the chief executive has to enforce the laws of the land, not the ones he likes, not the ones he favors. And he's not only, I said, enforcing Title 8 of our U.S. code, of our immigration law, he's intentionally telling his people to stand down. That's an impeachable offense. Sorry. I'm not willing to talk about reforming anything until we start following the law. And when we follow the law, there may be some tweaks that have to happen. If you ever read Title 8, it's a very complicated code. It goes on forever. And there's revisions and crossouts. And this is sometimes hard to even understand what the hell it is. But I'm not willing to reform anything until we start following the law, right? And we're not doing that today. So don't fall trapped to this reform immigration. There's nothing wrong with our immigration law. What is wrong is we're not following the immigration law. That's what's wrong. If we follow the law, we wouldn't have half the problems that we're having today. And if we follow the Constitution, and that's the name of this podcast, Constitution Solution, One Podcast Under God, most of our problems would disappear if we follow the Constitution. Easier said than done, by the way. Do you promote the flat tax? On a debate, again, all my opponents absolutely want a flat tax, blah, 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 blah. They got to me and I said, yeah, what if your flat tax is 80%? Why does everybody here think a flat tax is going to give them a lower tax rate? Okay. And they'll take away your deductions. I am not willing, I said, I am not willing to talk about how we're being taxed until we have the discussion about how much we're being taxed. Because one way or the other, it's going to come out of your pocket, flat tax or not, right? So, by the way, before the passage of the 16th Amendment, many of you may not know that the flat tax got ruled unconstitutional because of the apportionment clause in the Constitution. But the 16th Amendment, everybody thinks the 16th Amendment in 1913 was a tax that gave Congress the right to tax our income. I got news for you. By the way, I did an episode on this a while back. I got news for you, I said. Congress always had the right to tax our income. As a matter of fact, Abe Lincoln instituted an income tax to pay for the Civil War. And it lasted for about 10 years, and then the Congress rescinded it. I think it was in 1872 they rescinded it. Okay, I said, they always had the right to tax your income. What people missed about the 16th Amendment is that it took away the apportionment clause. So now the taxes don't have to come from the states in proportion to the population. And back before the 16th Amendment, all of our taxes were being collected by the states to the federal government, not on individuals, through excise taxes and tariffs. Everybody's bemoaning tariffs these days. That's going to sink the economy. That was the primary source of revenue for the government before 1913. So Congress always had the right. As a matter of fact, if Congress doesn't want to tax our income today, they could pass a law saying so. Because the 16th Amendment doesn't say you have to tax the income. It just repeats what's already in Article 1, Section 8, which they have the right to tax the income. It's the apportionment clause. And since they got away from the apportionment clause, it allowed the graduated income tax, which is one of the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto. And that got by everybody in 1913. I wasn't around, okay? And everybody laughed. But I said, look, if we're not going after this budget and this runaway spending and printing money with the Federal Reserve, right now, the government cannot quell its appetite for spending just through tax dollars. So they have to borrow. And when they borrow, the Federal Reserve creates money out of nothing. They create money into existence. Then they lend it to the government, by buying T-bills. Then we have to pay them back with interest. How's that great? Why'd you like to have a business like that, I said. So until we get that mess straightened out, a flat tax isn't going to matter, guys. Okay? There's no quick fixes here. Everybody thought there was a quick fix. That's the other thing. The American public, they all think there's a quick fix to everything. And there's not. All of these issues are complicated and a lot more detailed than not. Now, one guy said to me, what are you going to do about, you're going to prohibit, write law and prohibit China from buying land in our country? Okay, I need to understand what that means. I've got some citizens who are friends of mine who are from China. They're U.S. citizens. Does it count them? I got an idea. Title 8 of the U.S. Code does not allow anybody associated with the Communist Party to enter our country. So we don't need a law to tell them they can't buy our land. We already have a law that wouldn't let them in our country to buy the land to begin with. So, people don't get it, right? One of my favorites was this one. Guy says to me, how can we trust you? How can we know that you're going to do all the things that you say you're going to do? And again, this is in a group of about 50 people. And I looked at him, I said, I had the microphone, you know, I said, let me ask you a question. Why the hell would you trust a politician? And everybody started clapping. I said, that's the problem with our country today. I said, we trust our politicians to no end and we get screwed. I don't want you to trust me. Look, I'm going to do what I can to earn your trust. But I don't want you to trust me. I want you to hold me accountable. I want you to challenge me. And if I don't do the things I'm telling you I'm going to do, I want you to kick my ass out in 2 years. That's your job. That's your job to be vigilant and to be informed. But don't trust me. I said, what am I going to do? Tell you I don't cheat on my wife. I don't kick my dog. I don't cheat on my taxes. What am I supposed to do? I'm as corruptible as you are. How can I trust you? I said, look, you want a guarantee? Go to Home Depot, buy a refrigerator. They'll give you a guarantee. Okay, you're not going to get one from me. Because it's useless. It's useless. Hold me accountable. Does it really matter how I answer your question? Seriously. Does it really matter that I'm telling you that you should trust me? I'm telling you not to trust me. I'm telling you to hold me accountable. That means you have to be, the fact you're here is a good thing. But you have to be knowledgeable about what's going on and hold my feet to the fire. And I will be back here if I'm elected to have town halls, all kinds of things, right? Don't trust anybody in government. I don't care who they are. That's what I told them. I had one lady say to me, she was like in her early 60s. She said to me, Mark, what are you going to do about these computers? What do you mean by that? Everything's online now. I don't know how to use, I'm 60 years old. She said, I don't know how to use a computer. I mean, what are you going to do about getting us back to a printed type of medium? And in my mind, I'm thinking about all these cute answers I could give her. Like, yeah, I'm going to call Mark Zuckerberg up and see if he can print out Facebook every day and deliver that to your doorstep. Okay. I said, look, I don't know. I said, it's maybe, you know, I'm sure there's a local college here. You can go take some computer classes just to learn some of the basics. Well, I don't even have a computer. Yeah, well, you need that. You're going to need a computer, right? I said, look, if you want to drive, you need a car, right? So, you know, you got to understand that. But this is what I was getting, okay? So I'm up in the Navajo Nation at a GOP event. I'm going to speak at the Navajo GOP. Navajo is one of the counties, and I have the Navajo Nation, okay, which is an interesting group. And basically, they just want to know how much money you're going to get for them. That's all they want to know. How much money are you going to give to us? I'm like, wow. Well, talk about dependence on a government. But I was up there at the Navajo Nation. It was an outdoor event. And there were two other events going on at the time. There's like a car show. And then there was a band playing for some kind of festival. And this lady walked by me. Now, I was up there, had my tent, had my big banners up, and then had my whole team up there and, you know, handing out brochures and all that. And I was carrying a firearm. I had a sidearm on me. And in Arizona, some of you, you know, up in New England might think, oh, my goodness, that's just normal. You won't even get looked at twice when you walk into a restaurant with a firearm in Arizona, at least in the county I was in. And so I could tell right away, this lady's from the 1970s, hippie as hell with the beads, the long gray hair, the flower dress, the beads, the whole thing. And, you know, did I stereotype? Guilty as charged. I stereotyped, okay? And she walks up to me and she says, she looks at my gun on my hip. What are you going to do about the AR-15s? That's her first question. Not even like, hey, how you doing, right? What are you going to do about the AR-15s? I said, well, I own two of them right now, I said, but I'm thinking about getting a third. Any thoughts on that? So she rolls her eyes. What about a woman's right to choose? I said, look, ma'am, I would never, ever interfere with a woman's right to choose an AR-15. I'd give her some advice. I think there's a pretty good models out there. One of the models I have is a Colt, I said, and, you know, Colt bought the patent from Armalite when that went belly up, and they were the first major manufacturer of the AR-15. And, you know, I happen to like the Colt, but there's plenty of other good models out there. Well, I would never interfere with her choice on an AR-15. So she rolls her eyes and she starts walking away and she says, well, I'm not going to vote for you. Like, that was a surprise to me, right? So as she's walking away, I said, excuse me, ma'am, I guess a campaign contribution is totally out of the question. And she had to laugh. She thought that was funny. She just laughed. Okay. You got to have fun, right? But these are some of the questions that you get when you're on the campaign trail. And maybe I'll end with this one, which was pretty comical. I'm up giving a talk. And again, there were about 30 people in this one restaurant bar type of area. And I took a lot of questions and answers at the end and, you know, doing pretty well answering the questions. And at the end, it was all breaking up and people were leaving. And this one woman comes up to me and she puts her arm around me. And she says, you know, the only thing sexier than a man on a tractor is a man who has his shit together. I swear to God. So my wife is standing like 5 feet away. And my wife says, yeah, he's pretty smart, isn't he? Well, who are you? I'm his wife. Oh, she takes her arm off of me. This is what we got out there, people. No, don't get me wrong. I met a lot of smart people, too. You know, I met one lady who, when I was talking about the Department of Education, how we should dismantle the Department of Education, she said, well, where are we going to get our money from? I'm in education. How are we going to get our money? I said, where do you think the Department of Education gets the money to begin with? From you. And every dollar you sent, you're lucky if you get back 50 cents. You know, if as long as you behave and do the things they want you to do, you might get that back, okay? I never thought about it that way. Wouldn't you want to keep the money here in Arizona? Reduce your tax rate to the federal government. Keep your money here in Arizona. And control education at the local and state level. I mean, if you have a problem with education, who are you going to call? You can't call your congressman. That's the legislative branch. They have nothing to do with the executive branch. Who are you going to call at the Department of Ed? 1-800-GET-LOST. That's what you're going to call. There's nobody to talk to. So wouldn't you rather have the education controlled here and the dollars controlled here? But we keep electing these representatives who vote for these education packages because they would be demonized. State representatives would be demonized if they didn't vote for it because they'd be marked as anti-education, anti-children. And that's the game we're in here, guys. That's the game we're in here. So anyway, I'll stop there. I mean, it was an experience, okay? And I'm not trying to make fun of these people. I think it's a sad commentary on America. It wasn't just relative to this district because I've been around the country talking to people and, you know, the understanding. Some people are very knowledgeable. Don't get me wrong. I met a lot of smart people and a lot of informed people, very dedicated people. But I also met people who are their own worst enemy. There's one small town, and I won't mention it, 15,000 people. They had 4 Republican clubs, 15,000 people only in this town. And they're all fighting each other. These 4 Republican clubs, they had a Trump club, they had a Tea Party club, they had the regular GOP club, you know, and they're all fighting each other. So I got them all together. I got all the presidents together, and I said, hey, guys, why don't you just form one Republican party here? Or one, you know, one organization? You all have your own bricks and mortar. You have your own T-shirts. You have your own, you know, you're all vying for the same fundraising dollars. There's only so much fundraising that you're all going to get. So why don't you all group together? Well, the reason is because everybody wants to be head of their little kingdom. Okay? And they don't want that. So, you know, you lose sight sometimes of what the objective is and you start thinking about your little piece of the world. And as everybody thinks that way, without thinking strategically about what we're trying to do, we end up shooting ourselves in the foot, right? Then we wonder, well, how come we lost that election? Because you were fighting against their candidate, okay? And you demonized that candidate in a primary, and now the Democrats are using your own media against that candidate. Because your candidate lost. You know, they don't think strategically at all. It's not good. Anyway, it was an experience. I'll never trade it for anything. The world cost me a lot of money, by the way, an awful lot of money. And I'm not talking six figures, okay? It cost a lot of money for me, my own money I put into this, because I was very serious about trying to save America. Both my boys fought. As you know, I lost one in the war. Scott came back and also suffered the aftermath of the war. And I said, hey, look, I got to do something to try to do my little part to try to, you know, save America. But once I entered the arena, it was eye-opening to me. So I'm just trying to give you a little bit of feel here. And again, I'm not trying to make fun of anybody. I felt bad for these people because they're being abused by our own government, by the people that stand there and say they're trying to help them. They're not. They don't give a rat's ass about these people. Trust me. Okay. Not all of them. Paul Gosar, great guy, good friend, congressman in Arizona. Andy Biggs, Eli Crane, the guy that beat me, good guy. Okay. These are genuine people. But you got some others on the Republican Party that you can't tell a Republican without looking at their business card because they vote like Democrats. Ciscomani, Schweikert. These are Republicans in Arizona that are horrendous. Okay. So, and then you got the Democrats. Okay. So quite an eye opening. But this was called The Mind of the Voter, Stories from the Campaign Trail, Episode 53. I hope this was enlightening to you to some degree, to give you a little bit of a feel for where we are. And maybe it's not representative, but I think it is because I've been around. And it is representative. And I'm cherry-picking some of these stories, okay? This is 135 events, and I came up with a dozen or so anecdotes. I probably can come up with another dozen. As I'm sitting here, I'm remembering more of them that I didn't write down, okay? So... but anyway, I hope that's helpful for you to understand where we are. And this ties right back to the previous episode, episode 52, on the illiterate American and what my thoughts are on what we need to do with our education system. Because it starts there. It starts at home and it starts with our school systems where we are indoctrinating kids. And this is why I love Charlie Kirk, because he was unindoctrinating them. And moving them away from the whole Marxist movement that's infiltrating our country. So, okay, until next time. God bless, guys. Episode 53, The Mind of the Voter. See you next time. Thanks for listening to The Constitution Solution, one podcast under God. The Constitution is the solution to most of our country's problems. Other episodes can be found on our website at 1787solution.com, YouTube, Rumble, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most other podcast platforms. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio. Until next time, may God bless you, may God bless America, and may America bless God.